there here today. We're excited. We hope you've been enjoying staff development so far. It's been our goal here to help upgrade all of our leaders across the ministries, whether that's here in the administrative offices upstairs or in the local churches. And you're in for a treat today. I'm very privileged to introduce our speaker, somebody who doesn't need introduction, but really it's my opportunity to just brag about the man. But Pastor Steve Murrow will be speaking for us today, and he's going to help lay some key foundations on what we try to do here in this ministry and in the administrative offices. We're excited to have him share on culture, something which is so important, regardless of what you're doing and what job and what particular part you're assigned to do. Culture is a key component, and it's something leaders actually need to learn how to do. And so we're excited to have him speak on that and just share from his own heart what kind of culture he's been trying to build here as the founder of this ministry. One of the ways I personally come to know him is actually the year that his son was working with him. And I had a chance to travel with them, and William was my roommate. That's actually probably the one of the first times I actually sat down and had long conversations with William. Normally it's just hi, hellos on the hall, we would talk. But when I would talk to William, I was actually quite impressed on the caliber of the man at such a young age, the character that he had, the wisdom that he had. He's already since gotten married, and he was talking to me about the relationship and how it came together, how it's working out. It's an amazing story on its own. And I was reminded of one of Pastor Steve's messages when he talked about every time in Genesis you read, this is the account of Noah. And then he would talk about the children. This is the account of this. And you would talk about the children, and again and again. And I was listening to William in the back of my head, this is the account of Pastor Steve. And I'm looking at firsthand, here's a man who, in the midst of building a ministry, built a family. And you can see the kind of culture that he tried so hard to build here. First and foremost, he built it there. And so we really have the privilege of having him today. Jet setter, he's traveling all over the world, but we got him here for for this time so that he can impart all of these things to you. So please do open your hearts, open your minds, get your notebooks out, and make sure you jot down everything you can, okay? Because we have the privilege of having Pastor Steve with us. So Pastor Steve.
Okay, thank you, Carlos. It is great to be here. Good to see everybody. All right, your names are there. Communication. Who, Carlos, help me, or you guys help me. Who? How many of you work in this building? Okay, anybody does not work in this building? All right, you guys work for, raise your hands, you do not work in this building. All right, you're working in a local church. I'm looking at where you're from. Great, and what do you guys do who do not work in this building? Okay. Okay. All right. Anybody else? Building administrator. Where? Oh, you built. Okay. Kids. All right. So it's a miscellaneous. All kinds of people. Okay. Before I go through what I was asked to talk about today, I want to say to all of you. I want to say thank you to all of you for all that you do to serve this ministry, to serve your local churches, to serve your pastors or your departments or the people that you work with and the people that you work for. One of the things that I think we do really well, I got it, Jack, thank you. Nice watch, wow. Couldn't decide which color, huh? So that it doesn't matter what you wear, that matches or clashes. I really thank God for all of you and people you work with. One of the things we do well here at Victory and Every Nation here in the Philippines is the management and admin and things like that. And it's people like you who really do a great job and help us maximize all that we do. And I want you to know, it's not unnoticed and it's not unappreciated. I know God notices everything you do, whether your pastor or your boss or your colleagues do, and I appreciate all that you do. Specifically, I look back there at the back table there, and with Carlos and Pinky and Gigi, who've been with us for pretty much forever. And I'm very grateful for Carlos, his expertise that he brings to really make us all look better than we really are. And I'm grateful for that. I don't mean look better, you know, like a model or something. I mean look better. Really come across better than we are and communicate well. And Carlos, thank you for all of your hard work. There's nobody in this whole movement who works harder than those three people right there, Carlos and Pinky and Gigi. And Pinky has served for many years in a lot of capacities, and I'm grateful for Pinky's leadership, and I know that she holds as much as anybody in this whole movement a deep understanding of who we are and what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. And I'm really grateful for the leadership that Pinky provides. And the last few years working with Gigi, managing our money here in this movement, forever, every day, thankful for someone like Gigi on the job who, again, has a lot of wisdom and a lot of leadership and is leading a huge part of our church. So anyway, all three of you, thank you very much for all that you guys do. So, it really is a joy working with each of them. Very professional about what they do. And I don't know all of you as well as I know the three of them, but I'm certain that you do the same kind of work and the same job in your local situation in your departments as they do. Okay, you have these notes, is that correct? I just landed 36 hours ago, and I'm really, really glad to be here. I leave tomorrow for New Zealand. I'm speaking at the National Convention for the Assembly of God Churches, and also Sunday I'll be ministering in our Every Nation Church in Auckland. We have two churches in the city of Auckland. They will come together tomorrow, Sunday night, for a joint kind of a convergence meeting, and then some time with their leaders, and then training the Assembly of God leaders, the pastors there. In the last few months since I last saw you, the last few months is the longest I've been away from the Philippines since 1984. I've never been gone this long, and it was sort of an experiment to see how everything was, and it's all so far great. And while gone, I was able to visit a number of our churches that we have around the world. One was in Fusagasugá, Colombia. You've probably never heard of that place, Fusagasugá. If you say that five times real fast, you'll get baptized in the Holy Spirit. Fusagasugá. It's about 90 minutes from Bogota, Colombia. It's like the Baguio of Colombia. It's up in the mountains, except it's 10,000 feet. Baguio is about 5,000 feet, and it's cool all year. It's never cold. It's never hot. It's perfect. And our church, Fusagasugá, is a vacation capital of Colombia, and our church meets in a former cockpit, which is really cool. All the religious people are cursing us and saying, how dare you preach the gospel and worship God in a place of sin? And I thought, that's kind of what the gospel's about, redeeming sinful, shameful things. This was not only a cockpit, but it was the former cockpit of Pablo Escobar, June Escobar's uncle. Now, when Pablo Escobar was the largest cocaine dealer in the world about 15 years ago, June always got stopped and all but interrogated like a terrorist, until he could point out that he was Escobar, not Escobar. But it was very difficult traveling for June, seriously, in the U.S. because of the... Pablo Escobar is dead now, but this was his cockpit. And we've been meeting there, our church, for about 18 months. We're in the process of buying it. And it's right... If you take Session Road in Baguio, we're on what would be Fusagasugá Session Road. And about two blocks north is the largest university in the city. Two blocks south is a massive high school. We are tucked right in the middle of the high school and the college, and there are kids everywhere. And so I got to preach in that cockpit about 8 weeks ago. Wow, it was pretty exciting. It seats about 800 people. Our church is maybe 300 or 350. We'll fill it up probably by this time next year. And it's really exciting what God's doing there. I hope to, in talking to our pastor there, I really hope to get someone from here. We're not sure who yet. Maybe Michael. Maybe someone needs to go there and help them build some discipleship structures. And there's a lot of, it's the classic Latino fire, but really no form. And so when you have a fire but no fireplace, you tend to burn everything up. A lot of churches have fireplaces but no fire. And I think we do a great job of having the fire but also a fireplace. And that's where you come in, people like you and your roles that are a little more managerial and admin. Vitally important that we build the fireplaces, not to put out the fire, but to keep the fire from destroying things around it. And we're going to try to build some fireplaces there, some form to go with the power. But that was pretty exciting. I was also, I'll get to later some of the other. I need to dive into this. Let's look at on page one. And we had last Sunday in Bethel in Nashville, Joe Bonifacio preached, and David Houston, who is one of our church consultants in the States, and Kevin York, who's our North American Executive Director of Every Nation, they both commented that was one of the best sermons that's ever been preached in that church. And Joe was fantastic. You would have been really proud. It's a small church. I mean, it's less than 200 people. And so just before church, Joseph was told me, he said, "I am so nervous. I've never been this nervous preaching." I said, "Joe, I don't get it. Why are you so nervous? You do this all the time. It's only 150, 180 people." He goes, "Yeah, but they're all Americans." Okay. So, and you're nervous, why? And he said, I've never preached to so many Americans in one place. I said, "Okay, tell you what. The whole Sison family sits on the third row on the right. Just look at them. Okay? John Sison, Jan, and all their kids. Just forget everybody else. Just look at the Sisons and preach to the Sisons. And then if you need to turn, the Eben and Malou and their families right in the middle, just go back and forth between Eben and the Sisons, and you'll be okay." So that's what he did. It was kind of weird. He was kind of back and forth, but it was good. God really anointed it. And then last Sunday, that was two Sundays ago, last Sunday, Carla preached at Storyteller Church in Southern California. Storyteller Church was planted by Phil Bonasso about 3 years ago, and 80% of the people are in the entertainment industry. And some of them are budding actors, which means baristas. Others are actually Pastor Phil's son-in-law, Brett Simmons. He's a director and script writer. His first release was on the Sci-Fi Channel. It's the biggest hit the Sci-Fi Channel has ever had. It's the biggest horror movie ever on Redbox, which is the video service that kind of sent Blockbuster bankrupt in America. But Brett's first movie that he wrote and directed was called Husk, and it was the story, it's a modern retelling of Cain and Abel and bitterness between brothers. It's kind of that was the basis. It's not really that story, but there's a demonic scarecrow that's coming out of their bitterness and killing people, and it was a horror movie without when they got the script, they loved it. It was a school project, and then when the producer got it, he said, to make a successful horror movie, he was assigned to do a horror movie by his professor, so he wrote this. And they said there have to be at least two topless scenes. And so Brett said no, and he turned down a lot of money because he refused to work into the script something that wasn't in there and something that violated his convictions. And so that it got turned down because of that. And Sci-Fi Channel ended up picking it up, and it was a pretty big deal there. So he's actually directing another movie right now that is the star, the bad guy in Avatar, the general guy, whatever that guy's name, I forget what his name was. He's the bad guy in Brett's movie right now. They're filming filming in New Orleans. But anyway, they've got several people who are in the industry there in the church, and others who are trying to make it. So some of them actually are Disney characters at Disneyland. That's what they do when they're trying to break into Hollywood. But anyway, Carla was the main speaker Sunday night and did a great job. Joe just introduced her, and she preached and told her story and challenged the church, which I heard it was a fantastic moment for that church. All right, let's go to this. We're on page one. You have the notes. And all right, I'm just going to read through some of this. I was asked to talk about corporate culture. Every nation is a worldwide family of churches and ministries. Victory, Real Life, and Lifebox support every nation's global vision. So all of our churches around the world, I think we're in 65 nations now. We have churches and campus ministries and all kinds of things, but all of us tie back to this statement right here. We exist to honor God and establish Christ-centered, Spirit-empowered, socially responsible churches and campus ministries in every nation. And so within that mission statement, you can find what your role is and where you fit. Through our administrative offices nationwide, we seek to achieve the Every Nation mission while maintaining the following corporate culture. So let's talk about this for a moment. First, we try to create a missional culture. You'll see the next one's a professional culture, a relational culture, and a spiritual culture. And sometimes these are at tension with one another. If we want to be missional and professional, sometimes there's tension. Sometimes there's tension between being professional and relational. And I know that's a difficult one because the person's our friend, we want to overlook something. But in a professional culture, it demands that we have the same standards across the board, whether it's someone someone we really don't like or someone we really do. How many of you have friends you work with? All right. How many of you have people you work with and you don't actually like them? Anybody? Why does Carlos raise his hand first? Honestly, can you tell the truth? Are there people you work with you don't actually like? You wouldn't go hang out with them, but you're forced to work with them. Okay, that's reality. You won't like everybody. I know everybody will like you, but you won't like everybody. So sometimes the tendency is to have a different standard for those we like, and then we're kind of deal with stuff with those we don't. But we've got it. So being relational and being professional, there's a tension that's happened. Sometimes being professional and being spiritual, there's a tension that can happen. Because sometimes we would love to spend the whole day praying and being spiritual, but yet there's work to be done. And this is not a revival center. There are things we have to accomplish, but yet sometimes we can't just go about this as if there's not a spiritual side to it. So we do need to pray. We do need to seek God. And so you understand every one of us live with tensions every day. And part of leadership is deciding, is it a problem to be solved or a tension to manage? And a lot of the things we face every day, they're not really problems that we'll ever solve. It's just tension. There's a tension that we just have to learn to live with and we have to learn to navigate through. Occasionally, things that come across our workstation are problems to be solved, but more often than not, they're tensions we have to learn to manage and we have to learn to deal with because they're never going to go away. All right, so let's talk about what it means to be a missional culture. One of the first things we did when we started our church in the U-Belt, how many are U-Belt people? I see Orly. Anybody else from U-Belt? Okay, have you guys ever gone across over to Recto, down to our original place in the basement of the Tandem Center? You've been there? Is it still a billiards place now? Who else is from the U-Belt? Okay, have you been there, Jeff? Who else? U-Belt? Somebody over there? All right. When we started, our very first center, 2 weeks into our church plant in 1984, right where Dunkin' Donuts, is Dunkin' Donuts still there? It's gone. That was my original office. You would go down, and when you went down the stairs, there was a wall facing you. And the first thing we bought, the only decor in the church, was a world map from National Geographic. And it was taped on the wall there. And that was our way of trying to give people a world vision. And you might notice that around this building, there are maps and flags that kind of pop up all over the place. Our logo has a globe and a world. And it's we're trying to keep symbolically through symbols the missional culture. What does missional mean? So when we say we want a missional culture, we want the global vision of a mission movement. That's what we're after. Missional, and I've got three key words there, missional, global, and calling. And let me talk about those for just a moment. Missional. Missional is a word that someone made up about maybe 8 to 10 years ago. It didn't exist, and then some missiologist made it up. It may have been Ed Stetzer, my friend. I'm not sure exactly. Carlos, you know who made it up? Somebody created that word. We know what the word mission means, but missional, once you do the AL at the end of it, missional, it's like saying an adversary, okay? You've got an adversary, that's like an enemy. But if someone is to be adversarial, it means they act like an adversary, right? And so to be missional simply means to act and think and talk like a missionary. That's what missional means. So what does a missionary do? If we want a missional culture, meaning we want to act like missionaries, what does a missionary do? Anybody? Sony, what was that? Okay, they bring the gospel. That's what a missionary does. Okay, and how does a missionary do that? Think about a missionary. What is it? What do we train our missionaries to do? What was that? Engage the people. Okay, and how? How does a missionary do that? If you take a Filipino and you drop them in Nepal or Myanmar or Indonesia or China, what do they need to do? Okay, immerse, that's a great word. That's worth writing down. They immerse. What else? Become relevant to that culture they're in. Okay, think about, hold on to adopt a minute, Jeff. Become relevant to that culture. A Filipino goes from here in Metro Manila to somewhere in China or Nepal or Cambodia. To become relevant to that culture, what do they have to do? What does that impact? What does that affect? Anybody? Okay. How do you become relevant? What has to change? You adapt. That's important. The culture doesn't adapt to you. You have to adapt to it. What else? Study their culture, their language. Okay. What else? Bottom line is, if you want to be missional, you have to change. You change. Yes, exactly. You don't go and judge there. You go and change to adapt to that. And so we want a missional culture here. We don't want a culture that assumes the way we do it is right and the way you do it is wrong. A missionary has to go and appreciate and honor the culture that's there. So obviously, there would be certain things that you cannot take out of it, but there has to be an honoring, a studying, an appreciation. So we study language and culture, immerse into the, adapt to that. So all of that demands change. So when we say we want a missional culture in here, it's saying all of that, all of the above. Secondly, the word global. What do we mean by that? None of us in the every nation world are allowed to just think about our local context. We are called to reach the world. It doesn't matter if you're serving in Kalaokan or you're serving in the HR department here or you're serving in Victory Makati. Your mission is not just Makati, it's not just Kalaokan, it's not just Ortigas, it's not just the finance department, it's not just the communications department. We have to reason from the global to the local. If our reasoning begins with the local, we will short circuit and short sell the vision and mission God's called us to. We start with the global and then we reason down to the local. So we have to understand where our local department and our local church fits into the global vision. So we start global. We have to think big. That's, again, why you see maps and flags and whatever else we can do to communicate a bigger picture than who we are just locally. We have to do our work and build our teams to fit into the whole. The third word there with building a missional culture is calling. And that's something that we hear from missionaries a lot, but I think for us to be missional, we have to all carry a sense of calling. And I hope you do. I hope you see this as not just a job or a step on the career ladder. I really appreciate the work environment that the leaders have created, whether it's here in this Every Nation building and our Every Nation office in Nashville, or Every Nation office in South Africa, or your local church context. I appreciate that. I hope you do. But I hope you're not working here just because it was convenient, or maybe it was the only offer you had, or whatever the other reason might be. I hope there's a sense of calling. As surely as our missionaries better have a calling if they're moving to Nepal or Kyrgyzstan or Kazakhstan or India, they won't last long if they don't have a calling from God, if it was just a good idea. I hope that you carry a sense of calling to do what you're doing. I hope this is not just whatever job was available until something better comes along. Now, that doesn't mean you're stuck here for life. If God calls you to do something else, then by all means do it with our blessing. But we want to build a missional culture here. We have to have a call from God, and we have to sense and have a feeling that what we're doing is what God wants us to do, and that His hand is on that and in us, in the thing. Okay, a couple of scriptures. Matthew 28:19, go and make disciples of all nations. Again, that's our calling. You might be handling the finance at Green Hills, but our calling is to every nation. Acts 1:8, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria to the ends of the earth. And so ultimately, we're trying to touch the ends of the earth, but there's a progressive concentric circles that from where we start. And then I want to look at this passage in 2 Corinthians 10 and make a few comments. Neither do we go beyond our limits by boasting of work done by others. Our hope is that as your faith continues to grow, our area of activity among you will greatly expand. And so this is the Apostle Paul's heart, and this is our apostolic team's heart, your pastor's heart, and everybody else is this. One, that your faith would continue to grow. We care about you as an individual and your growth, but also that our area of activity would greatly expand. So we want to see the ministry expand and grow, but we also want to see your individual faith expand and grow so we can preach the gospel in the regions beyond you. So if you feel the pressure of growth, I hope you always do. It's never going to change. There will always be a pressure to grow, and I think it's a divine pressure, to go to regions beyond. Whether that's in the next neighborhood or the next high school or the next campus, or whether that's across oceans and across time zones. But there is a part of the gospel that is always expanding, and that puts pressure on all of our departments. Growth causes pressure. It's I believe it's the Navy SEALs motto, the U.S. Navy SEALs, is the only easy day was yesterday. That may be something you could apply to your job. It's never going to be as small as it is today. There will be an ever-expanding thing happening. And so I know if you carry a restorative theme, does anybody have that one? Okay, you can't handle when things are out of order, so you have to fix it. Or maybe there's a responsibility theme. Anybody have that one? I am glad I don't have that. I have irresponsibility. I can just go to bed whether it's done or not. Doesn't bother me a bit. I have futuristic, which means you can put it off until the future. At least that's how I define it. So irresponsibility, futuristic, apathy, and sarcasm are my top ones. But so if you're in an ever-growing ministry, there's always a bit of chaos. But if you're And I really appreciate people with a responsibility, but sometimes you may blow your mind because it's never always done. Or Bill Lloyd in our office in Nashville has a restorative theme. And so I can always, there are certain things I know I can get him to do, and he cannot stop until it's fixed, usually with my iPad or my phone or something like that. He can fix things the Mac geniuses cannot fix. In the Mac stores in America, there's a thing at the back called the Genius Bar. And there's usually three people, and they have they're on their name tag. It says their name, and it says Genius. That's their title at the Mac store. And so I took my computer one time there. I took it twice, and none of the geniuses could fix it. And I came back, and I told Bill Lloyd. He got so irritated, he stopped all his work, and in 45 minutes, he fixed it. So Bill Lloyd is beyond genius when it comes to all things Mac. But it's that restorative theme. He could not stop. He could not take a lunch break. He couldn't come up for air until he had fixed it to its former glory. But people like that, and like many of you, the stress is even piled up more because growth does sometimes create chaos, and sometimes it's not all dots don't connect. And this is our ever-increasing activity and greatly expanding activity and going to regions beyond. That sounds like a Star Trek thing, but that's what we're always going to be doing. So we're, in some ways, let me either torment you or let me put your mind at ease. In some ways, we'll never catch up. Okay? And if that really makes you go crazy, then maybe you need to figure out another calling to do something else. I'm glad you're here, but that's not an excuse to be sloppy. But there's always something new. There's always growth. If we get to the point where we're not growing, your jobs would be really easy. Then it's just maintenance and sort of almost like the job of an undertaker. But I'm glad we're not there. I'm glad we're not stalled or shrinking, because things that aren't moving are easy to manage. Things that are dead don't cause problems. They're really easy to manage. Dead ministries, dead churches, dead departments. Not a problem at all. And there are plenty of churches like that, but it wouldn't be much fun working in those. So I know there's stress with growth. I know there is. And we want to build some ramps to get ahead of the growth and get ahead of the curve. We're working hard to do that. But there'll always be, with expansion and growth, comes a lot of tension. And I appreciate all of you enduring that. And again, that's not an excuse for sloppy management and bad planning and changing plans and being late and being lazy and irresponsible and sloppy. It's not. And some of you might work in atmospheres where all of that is there. Hopefully we can fix that. But there is a tension and there is a pressure that comes with growth. And it's the blessing of God that we're growing. And so all we do is just do the best we can to keep up with it. All right, so here's the question. I'd like you to take, I don't know, how do you do this, Carlos? Do we break up in groups like three or four? Or is it just on the table, or do they turn it? Okay, however you normally do it, let's talk about this. What can you do to make your department, your environment, your congregation, I don't know, whatever, your part of the world, what can you do to make it more missional? To keep it missional, to keep the vision of a world mission movement. Now you say, well, gosh, what I do is count offerings. Not sure how to do that. I don't know either. But how do we make it, what can you do in your world where you work? What has been done that makes it missional and you stay in touch with the world vision of a mission movement? And what can you do to do a better job of that, of keeping a missional culture, developing a missional culture? I assume, Carlos, does everybody here oversee people? So all of you have people working for you. So what can you do to keep a missional atmosphere and culture with the people who work for you? How can you do that? What have you done, and what can you do to do that better? Okay, let's talk about that for a few minutes, all right?
Already shared that wonderful thing that is happening in UBUS, that some of the eggs are participating now in Victory Weekends, and they're hoping that that all of the eggs will participate and would be the eggsies. He handles buildings, and they are participating in Victory Weekend. And Jeff shared he's working in Lifebox, and he always shared to his team that their work is beyond them, and it's a good thing that their foreigners are visiting to learn from them. At the same time, they too are learning from the foreigners, so they have a global. Yes, and for me, from kids, we would be tweaking some of our curriculum for the preschool, and we have some of the kids could pray for One Nation. They're going to do it for a whole week then.
What a difference. For our table, Lou's team actually does the ENUS videos, so he actually knows where Fusagasuga is. Fusagasuga? Yeah, he knows where it is. So we were thinking, I work with the web, so we don't actually get those videos, but maybe it would be great if we have like a film showing so we know what's happening globally, because he knows it, but we don't. So it would be great as a team to know what's going on. Okay, and then Marian works for the operations for the events. And one great thing she said was when people book rooms, they don't think of it like it's just a clerical booking of rooms. They're thinking, if this meeting doesn't happen, APEC won't happen, therefore the impact in the nations is this. So it makes their work more meaningful, not just clerical.
Somebody there. You're the mic's there. Anna, Giselle, or Zane. All right.
Okay, we all work here in the building, and we were saying, how can we make it more missional? Me, for instance, I work with development department, with cricket. Now, when I started working in this department, we were only handling like 60 MPD staff. Now we have like 350 plus, like partners, for instance. Now I'm handling the recording, like the entries. So I must say, we must keep reminding ourselves and to our encoders that we must be recording this accurately and timely, because parang remember the impact of those MPD staff who won't be getting the right amount if when the salary comes or the payout schedule comes. So it's so hard to keep ourselves be reminded that our, even it's so minute, like our messengers, parang we need to remember always that this has an impact and it's a global impact.